Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're at. This is General Johnson, Greg Johnson. I'm Tag 63, and you're here in episode 8 of Tag Talks. And hey, this episode, I'm really excited. We got one of my favorite, I want to say authors. We'll give you some kudos, Jordan.
I like it.
You are one of my favorite authors. You are sitting on the Tags book list.
You're
really here to talk to us a little bit about data literacy. So today we have, coming from the great state of Utah, Jordan Morrow.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Jordan, hey, tell us a little bit about yourself. I can read your bio, but, I don't know. That seems kind of formal.
Yeah, I have a hard time doing this, talking about me. But anyway, I come from the state of Utah. I travel all over the world talking about, could be data literacy, AI, data strategy. Personally, I love trail running, being in the mountains, a big fitness nut. I've got a big family. I've got 5 kids, 2 dogs, and a bunny. So a very quiet house if anyone ever wants to come over and just have that. We have a family friend and her son that lives with us. So, a nice, very quiet home. But
that's fantastic.
I'm a huge nerd. I love data. I love AI. I love analytics. I think there's a lot of power. And I think there's a lot of good when you demystify it for people.
Yeah.
And help them to gather a better understanding so that the fear can dissipate and we can empower them to use these things to their advantage.
Yeah, no, I think that's maybe what we zero in on for this episode is talking a little bit about demystifying some of the terms and terminology and language and all of that. You did not put in there, though, that you're known as the godfather of data literacy.
So I have 2 nicknames. One I'm good with, the other I'm not sure where I am. The one I'm not sure where I am is the godfather of data literacy. Now that comes because I helped invent and pioneer the entire space. And I was in a meeting once. I did not give myself that nickname. I had someone say that once. I'm like, no, I didn't give myself this. I was in a meeting with the person who, she and I are kind of seen as the two, I would say, that started it all. Her name's Valerie Logan. And she said, well, you know what people call you, right? I said, no. And she said, the godfather of data literacy. And I'm not sure how I feel. My other nickname is Chief Nerd Officer.
Yeah.
That one I'm totally good
with.
My license plate says Chief Nerd. But what's funny about it is it says CHF. So they either think Chief Nerd or Chef Nerd. I'm not sure. We'll go with Chief Nerd. But I do like cooking.
Do you ever get stopped and people ask you, hey, what does this mean?
No, but what was interesting, the other day I was driving my car and I noticed the lady, I think it was a lady behind me, taking a photo of my back. And I can only imagine it was for the license plate. So how many people do you see proudly have nerd on a license plate?
Yeah.
I'm super proud of being
a nerd. Well, it's fitting in this sense, everyone I think points to data and some of this stuff is kind of nerdy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We definitely do that in the Army.
Yeah.
Folks go, hey, let the nerds go figure it out in the corner. There's a lot of that kind of, I think, language in our culture in particular.
Yeah.
Even though this kind of topic and this kind of field, I think is becoming more and more and more important, not just for how you run an organization, but at the end of the day, how you warfight.
Well, yeah, and it's becoming to the point that these things are not nice to haves. It's just a part of life, whether it's in your career or in your personal life. Like if you take a look at, it was just November 2022 when GPT launched to the world. AI's been around. I think they estimate that it officially started in 1956. But what GPT and generative AI did is made it accessible. Now you're getting personal assistant technology that can be a part of your personal life and your career. And to you and I, just yesterday, we were discussing that the wars of the future are going to be different.
Yeah.
You're going to be driven a lot by technology, having AI and algorithms and all these things make decisions, but you never can lose the human element. You have to have that human element there to decipher through what that machine tells you. I'm all for having a personal assistant as long as the human sits with it.
Yeah.
So that we can then make more intelligent decisions around it.
Yeah. And, we could probably riff on this for a long time, because I do think there's probably a whole segment we could talk about generative AI, how you can help build decision support tools to radically speed up your decision making in all forms of things that support, say, the war fight, anywhere that we have that fight.
I like how you just said it. It's AI is an interactive tool to support us or augment us, right? And one of the keys, that's kind of when I talk about like data, what is the purpose of data? And you could look at it from what is the purpose of AI? It should be in decision support to a degree, right? If I'm going to generative AI and I'm trying to write maybe a blog post or something, and I'm trying to really figure out, I can type right in there, hey, write me a paragraph on this. I'm not then just going to take that and copy and paste. I might modify, I might look at it, but it generates an idea for decision support. And when you come to war fighting and all these different topics, imagine you're able to put this AI and machine learning tool on top of your data. And I want to make one thing clear, AI needs to be data centric.
Yep.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yep.
If you've got bad data, can't wait to see how bad your AI is, right? But when we look at it from like a warfighting, or we're here at Human Resource Center, right, or command, it gives us the opportunity to, how do we retain soldiers? How do we attract soldiers? What can data show us combined with all the amazing experience people have here for decision support?
Yeah.
And that's the key that we want to look at with
That's I like how you broke it down. For me, I think a lot about you go back to the GPT concept.
Yeah.
You could have an HR help desk,
exactly,
right, using generative AI to assist and answer things.
Absolutely.
We have a regulation for everything. We have a policy for everything. But a lot of times you got to go search for that stuff. Yes,
yep.
You can do the little search bar. You know how that kind of customer experience is.
Yep.
Not the best.
Yeah.
So in the future, I kind of see us developing and morphing into that ability to use those tools.
Yeah.
To really better support soldiers.
100%.
Because I think if you ask me what keeps me up at night all the time, it's like, hey, how do we support soldiers better so they want to serve longer?
Yep.
And then when we transition them out of the Army, either they retire or they separate, then they advocate for service.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of that is about, hey, how can we treat them? How can we serve that population? And then how do we do better customer service to facilitate their goals?
Absolutely. And if you think of AI's power, imagine that, let's talk about the transition from those that leave the military and then they go private sector or wherever they go. Imagine having a personal assistant that sits on top of who knows how much data that shows those that were successful as they left the service. These were the patterns they did. And you go to a personal assistant, you type in, I'm scared, I'm nervous, whatever the case may be, what are my first 5 steps to ensure success? And then it can spit that out. And then you use the AI to say, okay, help me create goals around those 5 steps. Here's my personal situation. Here's my family situation. Here's where we want to live. Now imagine this algorithm and AI and the machine is saying, here they are. And you don't have to then just use it, you modify it, right? It should be an augmentation. It's AI literacy, if you think about it, where you know how to interact with it and you say, ooh, those first 3 goals are spot on. I need the next 2 improved, and I need these broken down into small, manageable steps. That's one of the things I hope AI does within data and decision making is, I think we get stagnant or stalemate when we're overwhelmed by the amount of information. Think about all the data the Army has. I'm sure just billions upon billions upon billions of rows of data. That's overwhelming. What do we do? Well, why don't we let an algorithm who can calculate and compute so quickly kind of demystify it for us? But in order to be able to do that, we have to make sure we're upskilling everybody in the military to know how to interact with it appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, I like how you're throwing it out because I think for many people, you think of Human Resources Command kind of as an HR thing.
Yep.
Which a lot of businesses look at HR like that too.
Yep.
But there's some real value.
Absolutely.
And recently we've put together a Human Resources Command Vision 2030, which is really meant to fast track us into a couple of areas. One is customer experience. How do you better that? But how do you better that with data?
Yes.
And then how do you transition yourself to be more data driven in your decision making, et cetera. And there's a whole aspect of it too that's all about how do you use data to get better readiness, in the Army. That's, more transparent, but also, you can do things like more stability, manage people better, manage your workforce better, all of that. We're always really excited as we start to talk this because there's so much opportunity and the value proposition of this command is pretty significant for the Army.
Yeah.
But let's backtrack a little
bit.
I just wrote down a couple of things, right? Because when I talk to folks in the Army, specifically the HR community, some people, I don't know, I feel like look at me like I got a horn sticking out of my head as I start to talk data and data literacy and let's define some of this stuff.
Okay.
Because I don't think some of this is real hard, but I do think we overblow stuff a lot.
Yep.
So I don't know, when you talk data and data literacy, what do you kind of see, you know, the definitions of those?
So when we were first building this program, when I started data literacy, my first ideas actually went back to when I was at American Express. If I can nail it down, I was asked, I think just the other day on a different podcast, it might have been, where, when was the epiphany? I don't know if I had an epiphany, but what I was doing at American Express was training people on all the data that we were building for them. So you're training them on dashboards. That's different than I'm training them how to use data.
Yeah.
And I actually built like a model or a plan for them or something along those lines. And my executive vice president told me no. She's like, you're not doing that. They're not ready for it. Maybe in the future. I don't know if the idea ever left me. I didn't know I was stumbling upon. So I eventually, not long later, I don't think, I left American Express, got hired by a company basically to be an entrepreneur. And that's where data literacy started for me. From a work perspective, because in the end goal, let's use an example, an analogy that I share. Imagine an organization of 10,000 people. Of course, in the Army, we have lots more, but we'll go 10,000 to make it simple. Out of those 10,000, how many will be actual data professionals by trade or title? 50 maybe? 100? But organizations are investing millions at times into democratizing data and putting it into the hands of the masses. If only 50 to 100 are data professionals by trade, that means like data scientist, data engineer, data analyst, and we're putting all this data into the hands of people. That's not the way to do it without in parallel upskilling them in some way. So that's the data literacy side. And it's not saying we all have data literacy in us, right? You use your weather app to check what the weather is going to be so you can plan accordingly. That's making a data-driven decision. But how many people view that as a data-driven decision versus I'm just naturally checking the weather app to make a decision?
Yeah.
So data literacy, by definition, is this ability to read, work with, analyze, and communicate with data within your sphere. I don't need everyone to be a data scientist, right? That's a small, select population. What I need is to create in people comfort and confidence to use data to make a decision. And so if we define what data is for, it's a support system to make decisions and lead to outcomes. And I think when you break it down like this, you're now demystifying and you're removing fear of the unknown. For a lot of people, there's data everywhere, all right? I mean, one of the predictions, I think it showed prior to GPT launching, 180 plus zettabytes worth of data by next year is the annual data sphere, everything that exists. 180 zettabytes for people wondering, I want you to write 1-8 and put 21 zeros after.
Yeah, mind blown, right?
Right? You know, 180, then 21 zeros after. That's how much it is. But the reality is that's overwhelming. All data is here for is to support you in your goals and objectives. So you just talked about a 2030 vision. Where data goes in HRC is to support that vision. When you can narrow it down that way, you're now demystifying all these reams of data or databases worth of data. And when you demystify that you don't need to be a data professional, we just want to help you develop some skills to be better, you're now removing, hopefully, fear. Because people fear the unknown.
Yeah.
They fear job loss. They fear all these things that data and AI can do. Well, what if we can empower you with skills that help you to not have that fear? That's what I want data literacy to be.
Yeah, no, I think that's very helpful. And then at the end where you kind of linked it to these goals and outcomes, you know, I push a lot the OKRs of you know, in Measure What Matters is one of my favorite books ever. You know, not to say that you're challenged by, you know, that author, but, you know, they kind of link together in my mind, right? You know, you understand data, you understand how this kind of plays out, and then it's all really about, you know, getting to an end state.
Exactly. What is the outcome? And that's the key for me is so many organizations right now invest so much in data and their outcomes are not working. And one of the things we're seeing right now is data leadership, like a chief data officer, they're losing their jobs. It's not because they're not talented. In some cases, it's because they and the business cannot align the data goals to the outcomes they're trying to achieve. Yeah. They're more focused on the tools and getting the data clean. But that data, as it becomes trustworthy and governed and clean, better lead to some sort of outcome. That's what we have to be able to prove as data professionals. I used data to do this. Great. Now look at the Army and HRC and everything here. Let's talk retention, right? Yeah. How do we retain people? Okay. What data would be best for this? How do we make it engineered so that people can use it from a people analytics? I know you have a people analytics team. So that then we know, okay, here's our goal, here's three objectives, and here's the data that supported it. That's what we need it to do. Mm-hmm. If you think about anything in life, you use supporting tools to help you make those decisions. That's all data is. And if we think about it that way, much easier to say, let's do it. You know, you build a house with a hammer. You make a decision with your personal experience and the data.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks in the Army in particular struggle with, hey, that's not me.
Yes.
This is not me. That's somebody else's job. You know, I'm the leader primarily. I'm not, you know, the data person. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time kind of say, hey, these things fuse. You know, you actually are a better leader if you understand the tenets and how this works.
Yep.
Because number one, your curiosity is going to drive, different results. You're going to ask different questions. You're going to find out different things that all support that end state. And you have a much better, opportunity to actually get to a stated end state or outcome if you understand this. I don't know, can you talk a little bit about that?
I think one of the things that we want to make sure when we're talking data, machine learning, analytics, AI, all of that, is the human element's not disappearing. It needs to combine with it, right? So a prime example would be, like, I like to train for ultra marathons. Last year, or 2 years ago now, I ran one that I really struggled in. Don't know why. I struggled to climb in the mountains, which is a strength of mine. Well, come to find out, according to my watch, it estimated sweat loss at like 21 plus pounds or whatever. Dehydration was killing me, right? Even though I'm consuming water and stuff, that's a data point that shows me, oh my gosh, I maybe needed to do differently.
Yeah.
In business and in the Army and everything, that's what we need to just be thinking of. One of the keys, though, is the human element is involved. And I think people get fearful, oh, my gut tells me this. That's great. I'm totally good with your gut feel. Can we combine it with data?
Yeah.
And sometimes your gut feel is going to be right. Sometimes we need the data to change because it's not right.
Yeah.
We have to teach that curiosity. I love that you use that. It's my first C of data literacy. We need curiosity, and we need to understand, one of the things I like to teach is your gut feel, intuition, and experience is probably built off personal data collection, even though we don't think of it that way.
Right.
The example I've used is, imagine a fireman or a fire person, and they're going and they're trying to stop a fire or whatever, and they hear a popping noise. And 8 out of 10 times, that popping noise meant a floor collapsed. That's not actual data that you're looking at in Excel spreadsheet. That's personal experience. It's a data point. We just don't look at it that way. Mm-hmm. We call it experience.
Yeah.
We call it intuition. It's your personal data. I want all of that personal data brought to the table. We're not trying to rid you of that. Can we just combine it with some of the data that we have available to make objective decisions?
Yeah.
One of the things I teach or talk about is we've got to try as much as possible to leave emotion at the door. Because when emotion is driving a decision, that can block objectivity, right? I just want to do it this way. That's great. That's fine. But we have to have feedback loops and process so that we monitor it. Like OKRs and metrics and measuring what matters. Totally good testing that.
Yeah.
But as soon as the data tells us we're off,
yeah,
we better put in people's mindsets that we need to change.
Yeah, shift.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm totally good with, I understand the fear. There's fear that my abilities are going to be ignored or this or that. That's not what we're saying. We're just trying to give you another tool. We used Microsoft Teams for a meeting yesterday that we were having. That's a tool. We use email.
Yeah.
That's a tool. Now just think of data as another tool to get your job done.
Yeah, yeah. One of the tasks that our people analytics team has is, hey, pull all the HR data and put it in terms that a battalion or a brigade can see themselves with all HR data. You know, so we have things like promotion rates and, hey, did you turn your evaluations in on time, error rates for mill pay, timeliness for leave usage, HR actions. I said, hey, people analytics team, can you guys put some of this stuff together just to see and show a snapshot to a unit, like on this admin pay side of the house, hey, what they kind of look like. You know, I got this sneaking suspicion, hey, we're going to see some interesting things once we get all that data together. But primarily it's, hey, can we provide a snapshot to then help a unit better take care of their soldiers?
Yep.
And so that's one of the things we're doing. And, you know, I don't really know where we're going to land though. Right. You know, so we kind of see ourselves and then, go from there.
Yeah. Well, and I like how you said that, like you have a compass pointing you a direction. We know we want to use it to support soldiers. But there's the exploratory side of this, and I think that's exciting, right? And one of the things that exists within data, because we talk data, but data is just data. It needs something to bring it to life, and that's analytics. Think of them as the two sides of one coin. Data sits there, it comes to life through analytics, and there are those four levels: descriptive, diagnostic, predictive, and prescriptive. Most of the time, we're just focused on the first couple, right? And then you have your data professionals doing the more advanced ones. And when we take a look at that, to your point, we can have an idea that we're marching this way, but we have to have the flexibility in our minds that the data might show us to go a different direction. We also need to teach people, and this is a part of the cultural change, that you're not gonna, like one of my favorite quotes, I'll use it off this, is from Nelson Mandela, a hero of mine. And it goes something like this: I never lose, I either win or learn. That's it. And in data, we need to make sure people don't feel like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna get in trouble if it doesn't go the way we hoped it would.
Yeah.
No, we're gonna still reward you even if it completely fails. Because what if we learned these four points from the practice
yeah.
that we implement going forward?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a much different mindset, because people are gonna fear doing something if it fails.
Yeah.
And we don't reward them afterward.
Yeah,
I'm all about rewarding failure. Everybody says fail fast, but no one really believes it, because you don't reward a big bonus if a project didn't go the way you want. And I'm the guy who say, I got 6 learning points from this. Even though it didn't drive the outcome we wanted, you get a nice bonus because look at these 6 things we'll implement going forward.
Yeah.
That's a different mindset that we need to celebrate and we need to bring into the culture.
Yeah, no, I think that's an awesome point. We do quite a few, especially over the last couple of years, pilots and different things to really try to test out, hey, how do we change some of these things? And then, you know, with this data scorecard, we're trying to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, what are we seeing? And then, hey, if it doesn't play out or we're not, you know, we don't get to where we think we want to go, then, hey, let's move on.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the other side of it, is I think at times people fear moving on, right? There was an organization I met with, and I forget the exact numbers, but the premise remains. I met with them and they were like, we have like 200 or 400 Qlik dashboards. So Qlik, for people who don't know, is Tableau, Power BI, Qlik were really the big three BI vendors, if you could call it that. They were using only 6 of those dashboards. So you're maintaining 200 or 400. I believe they were maintaining them all. I don't remember exactly. And you're using 6. People have a fear, oh my gosh, if I don't maintain these, job security's gone. No, that's not what we're saying. Get rid of the 194 or 193 you're not using. Use the 6, you've just freed up how much more time to find something interesting, to pivot and go a new way. But we have to make them comfortable that pivoting and going a new way is celebrated, we're exploratory, we're doing all these things. But when I say exploratory, the compass needs to be there. Like for HRC, it's 2030.
Yeah.
That's the compass.
Yeah.
Future warfighting, that's a compass. It's totally good that the branches might go all over the place, but we have the compass pointing us in a direction we want.
Yeah.
The other thing we need to have is leaders are flexible that compass can also shift, right? We know 2030 is the goal. It might go away from this to that. Totally good, because the data is leading us that way.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of our big things with HRC 2030 is also doing data literacy, right? You know,
kind of
rolling it out with the workforce and yes, it's upskilling, but some of it is, I think, just basic exposure.
Yes.
You know, so demystifying, getting into the middle of it, doing a little bit of reading, and then
doing a podcast.
That's right.
Yep.
You know, and hopefully listening to the podcast
as we
push it out there. So okay, you've talked data literacy. We've talked a little bit about analytics.
Yep.
We even threw in, you know, hey, some metric OKR stuff.
Yep.
Maybe explain AI, because you know we started with AI and we started with GPT and generative AI.
Yeah.
You know, maybe explain that and demystify that a little bit.
So I'm going to bring two terms in: machine learning and AI.
Yep.
And artificial intelligence is just that. It's artificial intelligence doing things for us. Like I said, it's been around since 1956. This isn't new, right? You might have Siri on your phone or all these other things that are there using, think of it as the computer doing human things for us. So when we think about generative AI, I won't go into the nitty-gritty of large language models, but that's one of the things that you might read about with generative AI. Basically, what it's doing is it's taking a look at all this data and building a prediction for you. This is what you want to see. But the key with AI is, for probably 99% of people, you're not writing the algorithms, you're not writing the codes. To demystify the fear, it's just teaching people, all you need to do is to learn how to interact with it effectively and ethically. There's that big ethics piece in data that's going to become probably even more prevalent as tools become more powerful. So when we look at like machine learning, the machine is learning for us. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. When we look at AI, artificial intelligence, wonderful. For the vast majority of people, it's just having a basic fluency, being able to talk about it a little bit. But it really boils down to, can you use the tool effectively? A prime example for me is in the education space right now, some people ban using GPT from students. Yeah. Like, you are doing a horrible disservice yeah. to the students. I'm all about letting them do it. And the example that I use is, right now, students might be given, you need a 10-page paper, X amount of words. Well, how often are you writing a 10-page paper, or me, in our careers for a business? Not very often. But you know what we have to do all the time? Speak and communicate and present. Even if it's a one-on-one, like right now in a podcast, if I was really bad at doing this, you might have cut me off 1 minute in and be like, you're horrible at this, right? But I have an ability to communicate.
Yeah.
So what I want to see with like a GPT for students is, what if they can use any tool they want to write the 10-page paper, but their assignment is a 20-minute presentation with 5 minutes Q&A?
Yeah.
You can't fake presenting.
Right. Yeah.
What we're doing is we're evolving how tools are a part of us. So when we think about demystifying AI, number one, yes, jobs will be eliminated. We know this. But it's not like we can't upskill and reskill ourselves so that we are valuable. More jobs are going to be created. And what really matters in demystifying things is, how can I utilize the resources that you and the Army are providing me? Like we talked about with 2030, data literacy is a key, right? Is how can I upskill and reskill myself? Because there is a part of it that's incumbent on us to be able to learn and train and do all these things. So what I want people to do is not be fearful of this. Just start playing around with it. Just go into GPT and be like, hey, tell me about this. Write me a paper on that. Just test it and play with it so you get more comfortable with it. But one thing I will key in on is, if you use it, make sure you verify the sources and verify the information, because it can, what they call, and this is a term that we could demystify here, is the hallucination of AI. Is it just building something that isn't even real? We have to make sure that we go into that understanding. A quick Google search, there was an attorney who cited a case, or more than one case, that I think generative AI built for that attorney, mm-hmm. didn't even exist.
Yeah.
They used it, I believe. And I heard, I don't know how true it is, they got disbarred for it.
Yeah, epic failure.
Yeah, it's like, don't do that. Like, all you have to do is a real quick Google search. Hey, you cited in 1972 this occurred.
Yeah.
Google, did that happen? I don't find it. You, very quickly you're learning, I can't use that.
Yeah.
So this proper ability to interact with it is what we need to build in people.
Yeah.
You don't need to know the ins and outs of vector databases and large language models.
Yeah.
What you need to know is, how can this tool be my helper to make a better decision?
Yeah, yeah. For me, Jordan, it's really like exposing leaders and others. That hey, this is a thing.
Yes.
And this is really emerging more and more as we go to the right here.
Yes.
And the more that we understand, the more that we're going to shape our capabilities in our organizations to use that to then better get to our outcomes.
Yep.
And you know, so I think the data literacy piece here at HRC, or for the AG Corps in the Army, it's really about exposing us to all of this capability, and then learning, and then moving towards, you know, how do you then start to use it to in this case at HRC, hey, better the support, better the readiness of the Army, hey, keep people in, right?
Yeah.
You know, retain them, recruit them better, and then keep the all-volunteer force in place.
So. Well, and one of the things that to key in on here is, there's multiple levels of data literacy, right? We talked about this yesterday in a meeting, and that was, you have all the learners, you have mid-level leaders, and you have senior leaders. And each of them, one of the keys to making this really work is having leaders and senior leaders understand that we're just evolving. We're making people aware, like you're saying. We're just putting it in front of you, exposing you to it. I don't need you to go out and use it for 5 hours a day and think this is what, no. You're aware of it, this is what's going on, and making them also aware, this is what HRC and the AG are doing to help you in the future.
Yeah.
That is such a key. And one of the key things for data and AI success in any way is the communication strategy. You hear me talk about this all the time.
Right.
People need to know why, right? I joke around, how many people like getting an email that says you have mandatory training? They're gonna click through that as quick as possible just to check the box. Versus, can we really help them understand the benefits, what this is going to do, why we're doing it, et cetera. Hopefully then you get all this buy-in, and the naysayers, you're always going to have some, I get that, but the majority of people have bought in and you're marching forward.
Yeah. And we always link it, you know, here in the Adjutant General at HRC, it's about taking care of people.
Yeah.
You know, so at the end of the day, I mean, that's really what we're trying to do here. We do have the mission for readiness of the U.S. Army too, But you know, for the workforce, hey, you're actually moving in this space to better take care of people.
Oh yeah, if people are happy, they're happy.
Yeah.
Right. I had the question. We talked about this yesterday. One time, it's like, how do you compete with data professionals staying in the Army when the big tech companies can pay so much more?
Yeah.
What if they're not happy there? Salary isn't everything.
Yeah.
What if we can give them meaningful work that is about people and they feel like they can see the accomplishments that data is doing? Let's attract it that way.
Yeah, we got that in spades here. Yeah. And that dovetails nicely with, you know, just a service in general.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, this is something to serve for, right?
Absolutely.
The U.S. Army and you know, this little United States thing here we got, you know, our country. Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that here at the end. And, you know, I know this was fast and furious, and hopefully for folks that are listening, it helped demystify a few
Absolutely.
Things about data, et cetera. Hey, it's not about being the PhD level,
yep.
you know, superstar, complete godfather of data literacy, right? You know, chief nerd officer, et cetera. I think it's, you know, slow and steady progress on our capabilities
yeah.
so we can better take care of people.
You're spot on. There, I don't need everybody to be as nerdy as me. I can read calculus or statistics books and be happy. I get 99.9% of people don't want to do that. So instead, let's say you're big into rugby. I'm a big rugby guy. How does data go into rugby matches? Oh, just learn a little bit more and be like, oh, well, that's fascinating. Data can be used there. Let's just make you a little bit nerdier. We don't need to make you as nerdy as me.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, my favorite book is Moneyball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that I talk about all the time, but that's for another podcast.
Absolutely.
And Tag Tots. But Jordan, hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for being in Kentucky with us and
Absolutely.
Here at the Human Resources Command. For those listening, thanks for listening in to episode 8 here. We will come at you soon with the next episode, which will be a little bit different topic, but it'll still be in the data sphere about how we upskill ourselves, et cetera. Follow us on all of social, right? We're heavy in LinkedIn. We're heavy on Facebook and then Instagram. Follow us at the Adjutant General. Thanks, folks. Appreciate it.